The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Welcome back to a UAB director's chair. He's the athletic director for your UAB Blazers, Mark Ingram. As you can see, en route, he's got himself a wedding up near Chattanooga, Tennessee. So safe travels. Pay attention. I'm going to throw some tough questions in this particular podcast, but I think you'll be okay. But welcome back to the UAB director's chair. UABSports.com, UABSports.com for all things UAB. Before we jump in to some serious collective bargaining, I did want to mention men's basketball. The AAC just announced the conference schedule, which is not a surprise because you know what's in your conference, but it is worth mentioning that, of course, 74-15 at Bartow Arena since the 2021 season for Andy, which is just fantastic, which is a 75% clip. And also the AAC championship game going to be right here in Birmingham, Alabama in 2026. So a couple things to chime in on.
Yeah, we're excited about that. You know, we work with the folks at the BJCC and Legacy Arena to try to work that out. Our commissioner, Tim Pernetti, came to one of our football games last year. And during the visit, I asked him, I said, hey, look, we've renovated the building quite a bit. Some of the folks from Conference USA that went into the American with us, they only know when they were here with Conference USA what it was. So I said, hey, man, it's changed a ton. It's worth you looking at because you may get some people that say, oh, you know, it's just kind of old or tired or whatever. And I said, I want you to be able to see it firsthand. So we set up a meeting and a tour with the BJCC folks, and which was a good thing. And Tim's a great guy, and he wants to move the tournament around a little bit. And there are others in the conference that think that that makes sense as well. And so we've been in Fort Worth, Texas. The building there, which is called Dickey's Arena, is beautiful. I mean, it is a gorgeous building. And like Legacy, that's not true. They don't really have a tenant. So the great thing about Dickey's Arena is they do a lot of, rodeo and cattle auctions and things like that. And, but they don't have like a G League team. They don't have a hockey team. They don't have anybody that's there all the time. They have what they have when they schedule it. The point of that is that means that then you can schedule much easier when you want to schedule an event, a week long event, like a basketball tournament.
Sure.
So that's one of the real challenges. Usually, like when it's a concert, it's far out as they can set them up, you know, and as long as they don't have a conflict, then, hey, we're good to go. So it's great that it works out. It'll be here in Birmingham this year, South Florida for the next years after that. And then, hey, we're going to try to get it back after that. There was a conflict here with one of the, can't remember if it's the SEC or the maybe another NCAA regional coming. It created a conflict for the 2 years that it's going to be in Tampa. So we might have gotten it twice, but they already had that set up. So that's how we're getting it this year. It's fun.
Yeah. And I mean, UAB's made the last four conference championships. So, I mean, you pretty much expect UAB to be back in that. I know we don't have a lot of minutes coming back from the team, but I know he's also done Andy a great job at doing a lot of stuff in the transfer portal and obviously doing some heavy recruiting for a UAB squad that wins roughly 75%. I think I saw on your site, you only have 2 minutes of regular playing time coming back. Khan's the only guy coming back. Is that correct? So you're going to be starting fresh.
That's right.
Yeah, it's going to be a fresh look, right?
It's 12 new players. Yeah, it's 12 new guys. And, Andy always does a nice job of identifying talent. But it's just what's really become just hard to get used to. And this is basketball and football mainly, but it's going to become every sport within a year or two. One, you know, common question that I get and that we all get is, hey, how's the team going to be? Well, I have no idea because I've never seen them play and I've never seen them play together. And but what is also true, it's not just UAB. Everybody is dealing with that. So, you know, if you want to, football season's coming up, if you want to say, hey, you know, who's going to be good at football this year? I don't know. because the teams that were good, that should be good, they lost a bunch of players. We lost our top 12 or 15 players. So did everybody else. Plus, we all have the normal senior, you know, graduates. So you have that. And so every team in our league has got like 40 to 50 brand new players.
Wow.
So they could be better, whoever they are. If Tulsa was last place last year, they could be second this year because maybe they had a good recruiting cycle while others did not, you know. And then you might have talent, but if they get injured as usual, or if they just don't gel, they don't gel together, right? Who knows? So it's a really interesting thing. One of the funny things, too, on the football side is that the academies used to feel like they were disadvantaged. At the end of your sophomore year, you can leave the academies. You can leave. No penalty, no payback. But they sign a contract called 2-for-7 right at the on the first day of their junior year. Mm-hmm. Now, if you leave after that, you owe it's like $100,000 a year back to the government for your education.
Well,
you got to pay them back. And so nobody does that, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I shouldn't say nobody, but almost nobody. And so what the academies now get is their junior and senior classes are there's more continuity. There's more unity. There's more, you know, togetherness. It has become an advantage because the rest of us are dealing with all these transfers in and out.
They don't.
And they're not quite dealing with that the same way. And again, what used to be, and then look, they're still losing guys after their sophomore year at the same rate that they always did. But in their words, they would say, yeah, but what we keep is tougher.
Yeah. I mean, I could see that.
Yeah. Now, in basketball, it is just a, you know, we don't play the academies in basketball. They're not in the league. So that doesn't apply to basketball. But we're all losing people. So Memphis was really good last year. I expect them to be good because it's Memphis. But it's not based on last year because they lost their best players to other schools and to the NBA and that kind of thing. And
there you go.
Who knows?
You can go to go to UABSports.com. It's the first story right there. Men's basketball, where the AAC has announced the conference schedule, the non-conference schedule, obviously becoming out a little bit closer to the basketball season. When the settlement of the House case was finished about 3 weeks ago, I think a lot of people thought it was going to put the collectives out of business, and now the schools are kind of tightening down the screws a little bit more, and it looks like the booster collectives are not going to be going anywhere. But now I just saw the first wave of submissions to the CSE clearinghouse for NIL approval. Almost all of them that were tied to the collectives got denied. First of all, can you explain
which is good?
I think it's good too. I was kind of like, ha ha. First of all, before we move into this new SCORE Act bill, because I think this is really fascinating stuff. As a fan, I want to know about this stuff because it's going to affect my team. Tell me what the CSE, because I don't know if anyone knows what the CSE clearinghouse is. You can't just go pay a basketball or football player $100,000 to come play at your school. It's not that easy. It doesn't matter whether you have the money or not. Explain how that process works.
Well, you can. So you have revenue sharing from the school itself, and that allows us to pay as much as we want to pay. And the limit there is that the athletic department, each school cannot pay more than $20.5 million in total compensation to their student athletes. Okay. So if theoretically you wanted to give every single penny of that to one person, the LeBron James of your incoming sport, you could. Yeah. So that does not involve the clearinghouse. What the clearinghouse is for what we would like to call legitimate NIL deals. Well, none of these kids have any true value in their name, image, and likeness unless they are a person who is now been at a school for a few years. People know them and they're like a Heisman Trophy type person. And you think of it like this. Could I put your face on a billboard next to a company logo, and the average citizen drive by and go, oh, there's Tony Curry. Mm. Could they do that? And the reality is with these college kids, they just could not.
Yeah.
Again, if you're talking about like a quarterback or a phenomenal basketball player, and I specifically call out basketball because they don't wear a helmet and fans sit close to the court, so you can see the person's face. But other sports where they're wearing hats and helmets, they're not recognizable in the same way. And football, if it's a quarterback or a player who is really dynamic and does a lot of post-game interviews where people start to know their face, that's the only way you're going to know this. So it's just very different in college than it is the pros because of the transient nature of now these kids moving around. And then again, even in the traditional sense, when they would, you know, need to be at a school for a couple of years before they ever got on the field, people just don't. And so what the clearinghouse is supposed to do is, if you were going to bring a legitimate deal, anything over $600 has to be cleared through the clearinghouse. If somebody said, hey, we'll pay you $1,000 to our commercial, that's fine. But it has to go to the clearinghouse. The clearinghouse, which is managed by Deloitte, they have a process that does what's called evaluation. You're familiar with that term.
Yep.
of this person, this student athlete. And they'll determine if that student athlete, if that's an excessive amount of money or not. And if they have that sort of value in the market where they are. And what recently came out, and you were asking about the news, is there were some ADs who said, hey, the collectives should still be allowed to do deals like they were any other business. And if we just run them through the clearinghouse, we need to make that permissible. That's what came out that's now permissible. Initially, I didn't like it because I thought, well, here we go again. We're right back where we started. Yep. But if they have to run it through the clearinghouse, I can live. And that's what you're talking about.
Yep.
This is where people thought they were like, okay, I'm gonna have a 20.5 limit, but I'm gonna have this collective over here just shelling out money, you know, on top of that, and that's how we'll get around it. Well, they're having to run those deals through the clearinghouse. And again, those kids, you know, you got some brand new player, you know, Yaxel Lindeborg, who left us to go to Michigan. Nobody in Michigan knows who he is yet.
Yeah,
they can't just put his face on a billboard or something. They don't know who he hasn't played yet. Now, yeah, we all know who he is because he was a good player for us. Michigan fans don't know who that guy is. And so that's the purpose of it.
Okay, so to move on then, there is a new collective bargaining bill out there called the SCORE Act, which seems like it's and they're talking about it perhaps being the first time a bill will actually get through the Senate and the House. So that's why we're bringing this up. Although there seems to be a player associations for almost every major sports league out there, including the NHL, MLB,
right,
and NFL, they're all like, no, we don't want to see this happening. Can you gently, if you will, tell me what this bill is all about and why people don't want to see it happen?
Well, one of the biggest challenges, Tony, that we have is that the NCAA has had its wings clipped so much they can't enforce their own rules. Yeah. Like, we have had rules for all this stuff forever, but because of all the lawsuits, they can't even enforce their own rules. The SCORE Act aims to give a little bit of control back to the NCAA, which is, by the way, it's the schools, to give us the ability to enforce the rules. The SCORE Act is good, but for the people out there who narrow-mindedly believe that there's all this money that's just sitting around available for these players and that they should get, you know, the lion's share of the revenues that come in, they're not sports. The Dallas Cowboys don't have a track team. The Dallas Cowboys don't have a golf team. Like, we've got to manage all this stuff, and we've got a lot of sports that don't generate any revenue, and even the sports that do generate revenue don't generate a profit. And so we're trying to manage 18 or more sports at every single athletic department. It can't be looked at the same as pro sports. Yeah. And so the people who oppose it are just sort of grandstanding, like, I want more for these young people. These young people deserve, and they just don't. They're ignoring the fact of what it takes to run these departments and all the expenses that go into it. So we'll see if it passes. I think it's a good step forward. I'm hopeful that it will go. My understanding is it passed through the House. Now I think it has to go through the Senate. I'm not exactly sure where it is today, but
if it doesn't pass
through the Senate and the president do an executive order, I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know enough about politics to know all that stuff, but I think unless you
really read up on it, and I would urge college fans to do that, just because I think it's really fascinating. I know a lot of people don't want to have they just want to see their team on the football field this fall. They don't give a squat about this. It's really going to play into who you're going to see and who you won't see on your football field, depending on who you are. It's really interesting. In that when you acknowledge that you're paying now players, you're acknowledging that there's 350 new businesses out there. And when you have 350 new businesses,
there's not.
I mean, it's kind of difficult to get into. Thank you for clearing that up. And I know you do such a wonderful job, and you're on top of that every single week. He is, Mark Ingram, the UAB athletic director, does fantastic job here. UAB director's chair. I'd be remiss not to bring up, you and I talk a lot of classic rock. I know you're a huge classic rock guy and a big metal fan. Your boy Ozzy passed away, earlier this week. I've been all over the place. I was on Fox 6 yesterday. I was in Chattanooga the day before. I've been all over the place talking about Ozzy, and I got a chance to meet him several times, bring him on stage. But I just want to kind of get your thoughts on how he engaged in your life. I would say that of all the rock and rollers we've lost so far, this one probably hurt maybe the most for me, just because I think so many people have so much to owe him for what he did for music. And really on top of that too, what a well-oiled marketing machine he had behind him. I mean, for him to be fired and go through all this drug issues and try to kill his wife and all these different things, and to turn out to be really a redemptive hero, is really amazing in this country.
Yeah. And he, I mean, I know he didn't live into his 80s, but he's 78 years old. For a guy that lived as hard as he did, pretty remarkable that he lasted as long as he did. I saw him probably 25 years ago, maybe a little more. And I remember thinking that he was 70 then.
Yeah.
and he was like, you know, he was like late 40s or 50. And he was running around on stage like a 90-year-old man is what he looked like. And I thought, boy, he's just lived a hard life, you know. And I never dreamt that he could make it this far. But good for him and his ability to rebound in the public eye, I agree with you, is pretty amazing. People are so judgmental and just want to cancel you, for one, you know, misstep here and there. And I'm not trying to kill his wife a miss, but just, you know, his general persona and image were pretty negative, which was the appeal for some people, right? For some people, they, you know, sort of his fans kind of loved the scary, crazy, you know, idea of Ozzy Osbourne, but the public at large obviously did not care for that. And part of what made him so unique, but yeah, his ability to bounce back. And he had that television show, The Osbournes, for several seasons.
They say he's still got a show going on. They're still doing a show. His son
Jack ended up doing a show with him. And it's crazy, man. I mean, he continued to do, and he played a concert 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, that's the amazing thing. And I think that's what everyone was kind of waiting for, because I thought he was going to die on stage, because I know how much he loved being on stage. There were several concerts that were set up. There was a Power Up thing. It was out in California, Santa Bernardino, this past summer, that they were supposed to be part of, and they got canceled. And Judas Priest ended up taking his spot. They played with Ozzy Osbourne. It was AC/DC and Metallica and a couple others. Anyway, I know how much he wanted to be back on stage at least one final time. And of course they put him in a big King's chair, and he didn't move the entire time. He sang, he did fine. It was a Black Sabbath thing, in the UK. And it almost felt like a Bear Bryant moment for me. It was kind of like, you know, you knew when his last game was up, you didn't know, okay, what are you going to do from now? And Bobby Bowden has said this in the past. I mean, he always talked about, listen, I don't want to stop coaching because I'm afraid when I do, I'm going to die because it's what I love to do. Yeah. And so it just seemed like he was just waiting for that moment to finally get on stage and put on one great show. And it was just so apropos that, you know, a little over 2 weeks after he did that last show, he's gone. I mean, it's just amazing.
But I'm glad he was able to do that show with Sabbath. I thought that was really nice and a good end to his career. But yeah, he was a pioneer in so many ways. You mentioned marketing, you know, not unlike Kiss, you know, really found a great way to market himself in a lot of different ways, in a lot of different spaces. I would put Snoop Dogg in that category.
I would too.
A guy who is kind of reinvented himself and become a person that, you know, people love and adore, not kind of dismiss as a thug or a bad guy. Mm-hmm. And it's just kind of amazing to flip that Ice Cube, all those guys from NWA, Dr. Dre, those guys that were, you know, we're bad boys of this scene. And now they're doing
that crazy. I mean, it just goes to show. I mean, if you got young kids, it just goes to show, you know, if you believe in something enough and, you know, don't be afraid to rebel and break lines of whatever you want to call it, to become who you want to be. And eventually it seems like it'll work out for you because you are blazing trail. So, hey, you're blazing trails, Chattanooga. Have yourself a good time at your wedding later on tonight. Don't catch the bouquet. have a wonderful time there. I thank you. And we'll catch up next week.
Thanks, pal.
Thanks, brother. You are in the can, my man. Thank you, sir.
Yeah, sorry. I had to do it like this.
No problem, man. It sounds good. People will be watching it. They sometimes like it when it's a little cryptic. It kind of catches their attention, so it's all good. So be careful. Be careful on your way up and have fun.
Thanks, Tony. See you, man.
I'll see you in a little bit.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.